It's like finding the Rosetta Stone. On the title page, over Das Wort Imperiertes Klavier, there is a set of what look like ornamental squiggles. And contained in those squiggles, there is information. In the system of tuning that we seem to have discovered at the top of the manuscript, book one, it works incredibly well for the music. It gives each of the pieces and the keys its own very, very specific flavour.
More than 2.5 centuries after J.S. Bach's death, we're still unlocking the secrets of his music. For harpsichordist Richard Egar, the discoveries aren't just academic. They allow him to transform markings on an ancient manuscript paper into the sounds of genius. Hello, I'm Brian McCreath. Welcome to the Bach Hour from Classical New England, a service of WGBH. Each week, our program explores the genius of Bach's music, both in the form of sacred vocal works and instrumental masterpieces. And today, Richard Egar will be your guide to the incredible collection of harpsichord works known as the Well-Tempered Clavier. We're online at classicalnewengland.org, where you'll find our archive of past programs, as well as links to translations, videos, and other resources. Again, that's at classicalnewengland.org. The sacred music Bach wrote over the course of his life primarily took the form of cantatas, written for specific days on the church calendar, along with a handful of longer, more elaborate works like the Passions and the Mass in B minor. There is also, though, a set of four pieces that aren't often performed these days. The Missae Breves, or Short Masses, were written in the 1730s, when Bach was in the prime of his composing career. In his job as cantor, or music director, for St. Thomas Church in Leipzig, he already utilized mass settings by other composers for high feast days, and that made him keenly aware of the way a mass has a certain staying power over time. The roughly 300 cantatas Bach had written, by contrast, are so specific in relation to the time of year and the text setting that their usefulness is far more limited. So with that very practical consideration in mind, Bach went about putting together his own settings of a timeless text. And to pull it off, he went back to that wealth of incredible cantata material he had already created. He carefully chose specific movements and recast them in a new form for the Kyrie and Gloria sections of the Mass text. You can imagine Bach looking through his files, scanning the movements of cantatas he had written more than 10 years earlier, and he comes across a short, joyful cantata from Christmas of 1723. And seeing the possibilities for these words of the Mass, together with the Holy Ghost in the glory of God the Father. Over the centuries, that kind of adaptation has sometimes led to a kind of dim view of these short masses, the thinking presumably being that Bach didn't put as much work into them as the music he wrote from scratch. On the other hand, if you were to hear the masses without knowing about their source material, you'd probably never guess that something came before. And maybe that fact by itself is enough to consider them every bit as impressive as the cantatas. Here is the Missa Brevis in F major. Konrad Junghennel conducts Cantus Köln with soloists drawn from the choir. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Missa Brevis, or Short Mass, in F major, by J.S. Bach, from his set of four Masses that are sometimes also called the Lutheran Masses. You heard a performance by Cantus Köln with conductor Konrad Junghennel. Richard Egar recently took time out from his usual job as music director of the Academy of Ancient Music in London to visit Boston as a guest of the Handel and Haydn Society. While he was here, we talked about Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier in Classical New England's Fraser Performance Studio. These two books of short preludes and fugues for the harpsichord, each of them encompassing all 24 major and minor keys, were written several years apart. And according to Richard Egar, the origin of Book One came from very personal reasons.
After the death of his first wife, his sons were 8 and 12, and I think any parent who has a child at that age is really, really concerned with making sure that the family life is in a good shape. And I just get the feeling he was educating his sons. He was teaching his sons himself. He'd already written the 2- and 3-part inventions for Wilhelm Friedemann to get his teeth into. And I just feel that the book is a very, very loving creation. And it's also very much a strong journey. It really is a journey from beginning to end. And we know that Bach played it to his students. This is an amazing fact. When he wasn't feeling up to teaching properly, he'd just play them the Well-Tempered Clavier Book One, which is an astonishing thing to do, just for relaxation. So we know he played the book as an entity, and it really does feel like an entity. You start this journey with this beautiful, simple prelude, and you end up with the most otherworldly fugue possible. You're in a completely different place from where you started. And just the nature of the music in Book One is, I don't know, it feels like a very, very personal utterance and a very intimate one.
There's also the context of what's going on sort of in the music world at that point with key center and the idea of temperament. And did he have, do you think, in mind a certain statement with this music?
Well, that's a huge question. I mean, there are still people who don't believe that well-tempered means well-tempered and not equal temperament. Equal temperament is something very different. That is what you arrive at by Schoenberg, when every key should sound the same. Until that point, it wasn't necessary. And, you know, the Germans are very precise. There is a word for equal-tempered in German, but Bach did not use it. He used well-tempered, which means that in the system of tuning that we seem to have discovered at the top of the manuscript of Book One, it works incredibly well for the music. It gives each of the pieces and the keys its own very, very specific flavour. You know, C-sharp major was still designed to be more pungent and more penetrating than C major. I can just play, you can show this. This is the C major prelude in C major. Beautifully luminous, no problem. I'll now play it in C sharp major for you. And that's extreme, because the tuning on this harpsichord at the moment is about 70 years too early. But there was still that idea and flavour behind the difference between C major and C sharp major.
And here is a set of those specific flavours that Richard Egar describes in Book One of The Well-Tempered Clavier. These are the preludes and fugues in E major, E minor, and F major. Harpsichordist Richard Egar with selections from Book 1 of J.S. Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier, including the preludes and fugues in E major, E minor, and F major. The particular character of each of those keys comes through in Richard Egar's performance, partly due to the tuning system he uses. In one of those developments that reminds us that there's always more to learn, in 2005, a harpsichordist by the name of Bradley Lehman unveiled a new way of dealing with the issue of tuning in the Well-Tempered Clavier. For Richard Egar, it was nothing short of transformative.
Bradley finally managed, it was like finding the Rosetta Stone. On the title page, over Das Well-Temperierte Klavier, there's a set of what look like ornamental squiggles, but they are not. And he was the first one to really recognize that contained in those squiggles, there is information, and that is indisputable. There are a set of 11 loops, which is what you need to tune any system on the keyboard, as you need to know how to squash the fifths. That's all very technical, but that's all you need to know. And the system of loops over the title show you exactly how to do that. And it is information. It is not an ornamental squiggle. Now, the interpretation of that information is open to dispute. But I say the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and the proposal that Bradley makes about it. It just fits so beautifully that the characters of the keys that are contained and the music that's in those keys contained within the book.
Fascinating. When we come to book two of the Well-Tempered Clavier, this is from an entirely different time in Bach's life. Yeah. Why would he come back to this idea of preludes and fugues through all 24 keys?
It's a very, very good question, and I wish I knew the answer. Very, very odd. And the book itself, it's not in no way is it like the first book. I have played it in concert, but it doesn't feel the same. It's not a journey like the book one is a journey. It's much more a collection of pieces. And I think book two is perhaps he had a lot of material lying around which he wanted to get together, and he perhaps thought it was a good opportunity to make another statement along the same lines, you know, sort of Star Trek II rather than Star Trek I, as I put in the booklet. A different take on that idea. And some of the music is quite weird in the way that a lot of Bach's later music can be quite strange and quite not very obvious.
Do you think he was just trying to challenge himself?
I'm sure he was. I'm sure he was already always trying to challenge himself and sort of outdo his own sons at certain things. He never wrote quite in the same style as Carl Philipp or W.F. W.F. more closely. I think he was very, very, very proud of his eldest son. And I think that was definitely musically his closest connection. So, yes, he was always... trying his hand at the new music, although that's not where his heart lay. His heart lay very much in the 17th century, if anywhere, I suspect.
Right. Thank you, Richard.
Pleasure.
Once again, here is Richard Egar with the preludes and fugues in F-sharp minor and A major from Book 2 of Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier.
Thank you.
Harpsichordist Richard Egar with the Preludes and Fugues in F-sharp minor and A major from Book 2 of Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier. Richard Egar is the music director of the Academy of Ancient Music in London and a frequent guest of Boston's Handel and Haydn Society. Remember, more from the Bach Hour awaits you anytime at classicalnewengland.org. That's where you can find this and other past programs, leave your own comments, and find more resources to explore, including a link to Bradley Lehman's website that details his theory of intonation for the well-tempered clavier. Again, that's all at classicalnewengland.org. Thank you for joining me today, and thanks also to Richard Egar and to audio engineers Antonio Oliart-Ross and Jim Donahue. The executive producer of this program is Benjamin K. Rowe, Managing Director for Classical Services at WGBH. I'm Brian McCreath, and I'll hope to have your company again next week here on the Bach Hour.